Hello, Bobby Schindler here with another installment of Bioethics Report. I'm here today to speak about the recent death of Jahi McMath. Jahi passed away at June 22nd. If you follow the Life and Hope Network, you might remember, or you will remember, Jahi's story. It was almost 5 years ago in December 2013 where Jahi went in for surgery to remove her tonsils in Children's Hospital of Oakland, California. And complications followed the surgery, and she was diagnosed as being brain dead. And this was in a relatively short period of time after the, I guess, completion of her surgery. And what followed was a fight between Jahi's parents, Naila and Marvin, and the hospital, Children's Hospital, where they were taking the steps to remove Jahi's life support, which would have ended her life. And the parents believed that they wanted more time for Jahi to see if, in fact, she could recover. They felt as though she was showing signs of responsiveness, and just felt that it was too short of a time after her surgery of a diagnosis of being brain dead. And again, we're just asking for time, which should have been afforded to them, but essentially was not. The hospital really stood firm in their decision. The parents had to go to court to find relief. It turned into a real nasty fight in the media, where the hospital was really saying things that I thought and many other people thought were inflammatory and just inappropriate to describe Jahi in the way that they were. They were calling her a corpse. They were saying she was dead, and all sorts of other types of labels they were giving Jahi to justify their position of removing her life support. And the parents were just thrown into this battle and reacted, I think, in any way a parent would, and they were just giving it right back to the hospital. And again, it turned into a real visible fight and a public fight in the media. And the Life and Hope Network was involved in advocating for Naila and Marvin in their effort, again, to afford Jahi time to see if, in fact, she could recover. And what it turned out to be, ultimately, it turned out to where the hospital was agreeable to having Jahi transfer out of that facility if the parents could find a place. And that's where we really were involved, because we worked with a team of people and other organizations to try and find a facility that would accept Jahi. And eventually we did, which was in New Jersey. And it was, I believe, the first week of January, almost a month after the initial complications from the surgery, that the parents were able to transfer Jahi to a St. Peter's Hospital in New Jersey. And Jahi was there for a short period of time before she was taken to a home in New Jersey by Naila and Marvin, her parents, to be cared for. And Jahi really, I think, was proving to the doctors, the medical community, and also to the parents' assertions that she was not brain dead, because the hospital said that she would not survive more than, I believe it was, a couple of weeks because of her condition. And in fact, she was, by the time she went home, she had already survived several months. So we kept in touch with Jahi and her parents, with our offices in Philadelphia, and with me traveling to Philadelphia. On a monthly basis, I would try to visit with Jahi and Naila and Marvin on a regular basis, which I did and over the past 4 years, and was fortunate to be there and experienced and witness Jahi responding to her mom's certain commands, moving her fingers, moving her feet. And it was just remarkable to see Jahi, having the ability to do these things after the hospital was so certain that she was brain dead. And while all this was going on, and again, this was in New Jersey, there was a court battle taking place in California, where Jihai's attorney was petitioning the courts to remove the brain dead or what was essentially California establishing that Jihai was in fact dead, and they did issue her a death certificate, and so the attorneys were working to remove that from the record, because they believed that Jihai was showing signs that she was not brain dead, and again the court was, I guess, gathering evidence, and there was actually a court date set for February of 2019, but unfortunately, this past, I guess it started, Jihai, or Naila had contacted me in May and said that Jihai was not doing well, and I guess she began to deteriorate and ultimately succumbed to some complications that she was having, and died on June 22nd, which was very sad. And our family, my wife and I and my daughter, went to the services, which were held this past weekend in Oakland, California. It was a beautiful service, a gospel service that I had never attended before. And there was several hundred people there, and there were people there, her family, that were paying tribute to Jihai. And it was a very nice tribute to Jihai, and a very special ceremony, and I was glad to be there. The consequences from Jihai's case, I think, are still going to play out. I believe that they will have to see, but I would think that there will still be some type of hearing or trial or something to in fact prove that Jihai was in fact not brain dead by the evidence that the family was collecting and subsequently over the years have submitted to the court in California. So I would think, because of the importance of this case, bioethically, medically, also legally, so many aspects of this case are important, I think, to continue and move forward, even though Jihai passed away, to prove that she, in fact, was not brain dead. And which brings us back to our position, and something I've always been trying to, in my writings, have been advocating for a change in the brain death diagnosis. I think there's too many discrepancies. It was established way back in the late 1960s. It's being used throughout the country by the medical community, and there's been reports in credible journals of medical journals of the inconsistencies and, as I said, the discrepancies in the determination of brain death. And what seems even more troubling from the calls that we've been receiving at the Life and Hope Network from our Crisis Lifeline, our families have been calling us more and more over the past couple years, particularly since Jihai's case became so public. Families calling us very concerned about their loved ones being diagnosed in a very short period of time, almost frantic. Many of the families that are calling us, where they want time. They don't understand the rush to end their loved one's life, and want time to see if, in fact, that their loved ones can recover. So we've been dealing with more and more of these cases where they call us, and we try to intervene and afford these families the time that they're asking for before they make an ultimate decision, or a decision that could never be changed if they decide to remove the life support from their loved one, which would end their loved one's life. So I think there's still a lot to be determined from Jihai's case. We'll have to we'll keep you posted and see what the courts are going to do now that Jihai died. In the meantime, I ask you to please keep Jihai's family in your prayers. Her mother's having a very difficult time, and as one can imagine, and they need our prayers. So with that, just some initial thoughts, and I think I'll come back and talk more about Jihai's case, and I think some of the more important bioethical issues, I think, involving Jihai's case and the brain dead diagnosis, and really how it intertwines with the organ donations. I think they're intimately or closely connected, and why some of these decisions are being made in a very quick period of time to end the lives of these persons who have been diagnosed as brain dead to harvest their organs. But perhaps that'll be an upcoming podcast. So as I said, please keep Jahai's family in your prayers. And until we know for sure, you know, what the courts are going to do. But as soon as we hear something, we'll come back and update you. So thank you very much, and have a good day.